Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wrestling Daily. I have a new webcam now that seems to be working fine, and we are joined by Steph Chase. So Steph, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Louis. How are you? Nice to see you in better quality.
Yeah, I've spent the entire day going through these, which are notes on if political campaigning makes any difference to election outcomes. So I'm excited to talk wrestling. And a good two shows we had last night. We've got all that to talk about NXT and AEW from last night. An interesting name being at NXT last night. Roman Reigns getting new music. An AEW star turning down WWE. And then Undertaker decided to, I'm sure it wasn't his choice, but he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, Joe Rogan Experience. And I don't know where, so I took day off work today. I don't know where this came from, but when I was scrolling through stories to cover on the show, I was like, oh, okay. He really revealed a lot. So The Undertaker spoke about taking steroids, took some shots on the current WWE product, and explained his current WWE contract status. So we've got a lot of news to talk about, a lot of just a lot of great stuff to dive into today. And I'm sure Steph will be here judging your guys' hot takes in the comments or maybe giving one or two. So let's start with AEW last night, which I thought was actually, listen, if this was Raw, I'd probably be sitting here saying to you, fantastic show, absolutely brilliant show. But because it's not Raw and because it's AEW, I actually didn't think it was as good as some of the other AEW shows that we've seen over the past couple of weeks. I think it was actually one of the weaker shows they've done for a couple of months now, but still perfectly solid nonetheless. There was nothing offensive about it or wrong about it. I just didn't think it was as high as the standards that AEW have set for themselves.
Yeah, I didn't think it was one of their best shows. I wasn't disappointed by it, didn't put me in a bad mood or anything. I think I would have jiggled some things around. I think I would have ended how they began. I think that would have been much hotter. But there was some really good stuff on it. It just wasn't like totally blow away, but we got to see Moxley wrestle again. And we'll probably get into it, but I loved the opening segment. I think it was one of my favorite Dynamite openings they've ever had. I would have certainly put that at the end, but there was nothing like majorly big coming out of it as well. So it was a solid show, and you know, not every show is going to be blow away. I think we just have pretty high expectations. Certainly better than the Raw we talked about on Tuesday, though, Louis.
No one turned up with some awful makeup after being burnt, so it's automatically a better show. It's not the worst show. I think what you say, AEW has been a victim of its own success in that regard, because it's so good that when the show isn't 5 out of 5, everyone's been like, it wasn't great, but there's nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't at the high standards that AEW set. And listen, a lot of people, there'll be a lot said about the opening segment, but I think I judge it similar to how I judge the Brody Lee show, in that you can't judge it. They did this thing for a kid. Like, it worked in terms of the storyline, but it was also for Brody Lee Jr. And you know what? That kid's been through hell. If they want to help him in any way possible and make him smile, then fair play to them. I thought it was that segment, that opening bit, took me properly through the emotions of sort of emotional for Brody Lee and Brody Lee's son. Then the action was great. And then laughing at the post-match with John Silver basically proposing to Hangman Page, which was hilarious. And then Hangman Page rejecting a spot in the Dark Order, which I thought was, I didn't see coming. I thought he was going to accept it, particularly with how Dark Order have been being portrayed as babyfaces recently. I thought that that was going to be the next step. But yeah, it was a real, like, sort of, as you say, a segment that it was a great opening to Dynamite and really quite sort of emotionally provoking, I guess.
I really loved it. And I think that I, maybe more than other people, enjoyed it as a segment, even if you put your emotions aside or don't even know the situation going into it, because I think they actually just played it very well for what it was. You know, we have Negative One, who's in the Dark Order. It's his birthday. You know, yes, he's a kid, but he totally works. I thought Luther coming out and being the villain works, because if you're going to use someone in that spot, I think Luther's a good person. It's not as if you're ever going to push Luther to the moon. So yeah, let Luther be the guy that lands in the cake. And you know, people that like to talk AEW with me on Fridays know how invested I am in the Dark Order Hangman story. It is my favorite thing. So also, you know, great match as well. But then I loved the ending bit, John Silver proposing to Hangman Page, which was so appropriate, because this whole thing is Hangman Page is a guy that absolutely had his heart broken the last time he gave his heart to someone, to Kenny, and look how that worked out. And he gave him the answer of someone that has been through heartbreak and doesn't really know if they can trust someone anymore, and they don't know if they can make that commitment. So he said, you know, as much fun as we've been having together, I can't put myself through that again because of, you know, my past scarring from my past relationship. So I love that. Like, it's not the end of Hangman and the Dark Order. I think that maybe next week Hangman might help them out, you know, and show that he's on their side and he's with them, even if he can't just like fully commit. And I think as weeks go on, I think we probably will get Hangman in the Dark Order. He needs to learn and know for sure that John Silver and Alex Reynolds are not like Kenny. They're not going to do what Kenny did. They're in this for life, and their feelings are genuine, and it's just lovely. But yeah, I did see some people, you know, particularly when I was listening to Dave Meltzer this morning, kind of talk about the bits with Negative One, that it just wouldn't be, it wasn't good for people that didn't know like the whole story behind it. I don't think that at all. I think it was a great segment, whether you know the history of what's happened or not. I really do. I think that there's something about the Dark Order where this kid, if he's used well and sparingly, actually fits into it, and it doesn't seem weird or too cheesy or anything like that.
And also, who cares if it doesn't really work for the story for one segment? I know business-wise, yes, probably not. I don't think it didn't work for the story like you, but if you go by what Meltzer said, yes, business-wise might not be the smartest thing to do because it isn't. Might not make sense, but who cares in terms of this kid has obviously lost his father less than a month ago. If AW for his birthday has decided they want to bring him to a show, have his favorites come out and his father's stable, you know what, fair play to them. It's not offending anyone, why not? And I like what you said about the Hangman thing. It feels like he's been in a relationship before that didn't end very well, and he's had a bit of a rebound, some fun with the Dark Order. And then Dark Order have gone, oh, like, where's this going? Are we taking this, like, is this going to be something serious? And then he sort of got a bit worried. Like, oh, I thought this was just a bit of fun for the meantime.
Yeah, he's not ready to realize his full feelings. In his head, it's fun, but he's not ready to look into his heart and see John Silver and Alex Reynolds shining within there. He's just not ready for that yet. And I loved how they had the he said yes ready and it all came down, and then like the background comedy of them, you know, getting rid of it, like the comedy that they do, especially with the Dark Order, works. And I'm not someone that can that says that a lot when it comes to wrestling comedy, but their comedy always for me like hits very well. And I love that opening, and I would have put it at the end. I would have had the closing shot of Dynamite be like a heartbroken John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and Paige looking like walking off with the bottle, and knowing that he's probably hurt two people that care about him, but just needing that, you know, space. I think that would have been a great closing.
Yeah. So I thought, as I said, AEW was solid, but I had an issue with two of the matches on the show. Moving on slightly. Actually, before we do move on, if you guys want to get in your Ultra Chats, head on over to WrestleTalk.com/Wrestle2. Get in your thoughts, comments, anything you want us to talk about from Dynamite, NXT, from the news, or if you guys have got any particular thoughts that you want to share, then please do let us know. But one of the sort of, not issues I had with AEW Dynamite this week, but two things I didn't like were the Jon Moxley and... Jon Moxley match and the Cody Rhodes match. I thought both were good matches, but Cody Rhodes shouldn't be selling for as long as he was for Peter Avalon. I get that that's what Cody does, and Cody helps the younger talent, sort of younger talent, but the yes, it let her utilize talent. But I just really thought it was almost he sold too much, and there needs to be some level. Not every match needs to be a 50-50 where you don't know who's going to win. There needs to be some points where, you know what, Jon Moxley comes out there, his first match back. And I know that they were trying to put over this new guy, which is great. But I think sometimes he just needs to come out his first match full of piss and vinegar, like paradigm shift straight away, and then choke him out. You need those matches sometimes to convey the characters. I think sometimes AEW puts a bit of too much of an emphasis on the matches being of a good quality, that like the Peter Avalon match, which was good, like, but I think a squash would have been more beneficial for Cody. He didn't come out looking great, which isn't ideal, I guess. Is this me being just perhaps a bit cynical? Do you share in what I'm saying or understand it, or do you think I just stop moaning?
With the Cody match, I would have either gone a squash, as you said, or had Cody lose after Jade came out and he got a low blow. I would have then had that lead to the finish. So I would never have done this long match that they did. I thought it should have been over in a matter of minutes. And I think, I mean, it depends what their future plans are for Peter Avalon, but no offense to him, I can't see that he's going to be a big deal at any time. So I would have either had him have this like great quick upset win on Cody that we all know was because of Jade Cargill and the distraction, or have Cody just squash him to then, you know, send a message to Jade Cargill. Either way, but I wouldn't have done it as they did do it. You know, we did not need that length of match from Peter Avalon. When it comes to Jon Moxley, they were really trying to get Will, what was his name? Nick Comoroto. They were really trying to get him over, and he was very impressive. He's been impressive on Dark. He's got a great look to him. I don't know if Jon Moxley was the person that should have been giving him this 50-50. Really, I would have had Jon Moxley do a squash, or if he wants a longer match, do it against someone more established. I thought that was a bit strange too. I think Moxley, like, he always wants to give a lot, but he is the former champion who lost, and even if he lost by unfair means, he does need to build himself back up.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the issue that AEW wrestlers have is they're too selfless. I think in wrestling, sometimes, yeah. I'm not talking WCW levels of creative control where you refuse to put anyone over, but sometimes, you know what, you need to be a bit selfish. You need to go, no, this match, I shouldn't be selling for Peter Avalon for 20 minutes. We haven't seen him wrestle on Dynamite in weeks. He's on a losing streak. I know he was. To be honest, I don't watch Dark, so I don't know. But like, I think you need to sometimes put over that, all right, these guys, there is a division of talent, and not everyone can take Cody to a 10-minute match. I said this when he was doing his TNT title open challenge thing. he put over people so much that it would be more impactful, for example, if he went 10 minutes with, I think it was Mark Quen who he wrestled, maybe 15 with Jungle Boy, and then he goes 20 minutes with Scorpio Sky, and we're all like, oh, okay, damn, Scorpio Sky now feels like a bigger deal because he took Cody to the limit. But if everyone's taking Cody to the limit, then when someone does, it doesn't have that impact. I'm not like, oh, wow, yeah, he really took him to the limit, because now it's just commonplace. I agree with the Moxley match that, listen, like, this Nick guy looked really good. And probably someone that we saw this a couple of times with Will Hobbs before he started getting used properly. They started putting him in these showcases, and maybe that's something AEW's looking to do with him. But I think there's a time and a place for that, and I wouldn't have had it in this time. I think it was more, I was more salty about it because I just seen the Cody one. So I think it was a compound of the two. I was a bit like, a couple of people in the comments have mentioned Peter Avalon won 5 matches. Yeah, I know he's won matches on. I know he was going through that losing streak, lost to Brandon Cutler, and then was started to win again on Dark. But I think, yes, they did mention it on commentary. But if you're not showing us win, you can't go from Dark to then Dynamite and expect me to know that you're going to take Cody to the limit, even if you're winning 5 matches. Maybe. Yeah. Show one of the matches or something to make me feel that this guy can take him to the limit. And I know, listen, this is such a minor nitpick. It's me, I guess, if I had any issues with AEW for the past couple of weeks, it would be this, because there isn't really anything else to have an issue with.
Yeah, I think that you have to put yourself in the mind of a totally casual viewer who's not even looking at this stuff on Twitter. And Peter Avalon being on a 5-match streak on Dark, that just being mentioned in commentary, that'll still go over the heads of most of your viewers. So to them, he is just as unknown as Nick is, you know. Yeah. And I think if anything, I would have had Nick face Cody with a longer match, and then Moxley just squash someone that you is total unknown, you don't really have anything behind, squash Griff Garrison or something. No offense to him either, but you know what I mean? Something like that.
No, I do agree. I mean, elsewhere on the show, we saw, funny segments with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, which just continues to be complex, but sort of detailed and engaging, and something I'm really, really enjoying. Matt Hardy and Private Party. I've spoken on this show before about how I haven't really been that impressed with Private Party. I would have expected them in the first year of AEW to have done more than they have done. But I think over the last couple of weeks, with this partnership with Matt Hardy, turning up in Impact on Tuesday, becoming number one contenders, and turning heel, they're really starting to show some character and do some great stuff. And I'm enjoying what they're doing at the moment, especially this Big Money Matt character.
The Matt Hardy character and the Matt Hardy Private Party partnership was really the only AEW thing that I had a problem with over the past couple of weeks since it started. I didn't think it was the right move for Private Party to put them with Matt Hardy. It's the whole, you know, contract thing, money thing. It didn't even make sense of why you would even need Matt Hardy as your manager and taking all this money. So I had been very down on it, and it had been the AEW thing that I'd been the most down on. And I just said, you know what, guys, I don't get this. And I don't think it's right for these two young guys who are called Private Party, meant to be, you know, fun party guys, being stuck with Matt Hardy. Then Matt Hardy and Private Party turned up on Impact. And I just thought, you know what, if this is where it's going, this is great. I thought them coming to Impact with Matt Hardy was the first thing in this whole storyline that made sense, because Matt Hardy has that big Impact connection. He really did help save Impact a couple of years ago. So for him to come back with his new young tag team and then end up being the number one contenders for the Impact tag title, that was all awesome. So this story has redeemed itself for me this week by that Impact appearance.
No, I do. I agree with you too. And we got a comment here from Updown Avondale, sort of on what we were saying earlier, I guess, with casual viewers. Tony Khan. God, I'll just say, I'll read it out for podcast listeners. I don't think AEW aims their shows at casual viewers. Tony Khan wants hardcore wrestling fans, and those are the people that watch Dark and watch Being the Elite. You seemed like you had a you had a response to that.
Sorry. Sorry, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me? No,
sorry. Yeah, you went off a bit there. I don't think this is true at all. Tony Khan does want hardcore wrestling fans. Yes, everyone does. He also wants to bring back lapsed fans. And you cannot aim a show at just hardcore wrestling fans. That's not going to work. You want to bring in people that haven't watched wrestling. If Tony Khan's whole business plan was to aim at just hardcore wrestling fans, frankly, there's not enough of them to make a giant show and get giant viewerships and make a great money-making product. So I think that while we're all in the bubble, and that bubble may say that like the real wrestling fans or the most hardcore wrestling fans watch AEW and they follow Being the Elite and Dark, yeah, that's true, but that is not who this is aimed at. Dynamite is a show on network television. It's got a great time slot on TNT. This is not something aimed at a niche audience at all. This is meant to be mainstream. It's meant to be for channel flickers. It's meant to be for everyone and to bring in more fans. So no, I can't agree with that. Like all this stuff on Dark, Being the Elite that we watch, people that are hardcore, it does need to be explained more to the general audience.
No, I agree with you. And listen, I think that Tony Khan's a businessman. So yes, Tony Khan wants to, like, he's done well and he's got the casual, maybe not the casual 700 to 900,000 viewers. But Tony Khan is going to want to get that million. He's going to want to push on.
Yeah.
And you can't rely on, you can't narrow down your target audience. And want to progress, you do need to go, all right, how can we be accessible to more people? And if that's explaining things slightly more, if that's not doing the making things make sense for the casual as opposed to the hardcore fan, then I think you've got to. I think I understand what you're saying in terms of AEW as a whole target. It's more targeted to the hardcore audience than WWE. That's without question. But I don't think that he only caters to them. I think that if he wants to progress the business and the company, he is going to have to try and move the company forward and appeal to a wide variety of fans.
I think that he himself is a hardcore fan for life, and he uses the sensible kind of booking mentality, what the fans actually want kind of booking that pleases the hardcore fans. And he's using that in the hope that that's the right way to go, that casual fans and non-fans will then be drawn in. But he is absolutely trying to appeal to a mass audience. And I think you can even see that watching Dynamite, because there's so much different stuff going on, from your characters like Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega to then the Dark Order and people like that. There's a lot going on in that show that's meant for mass appeal rather than any kind of niche.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All I mean, sort of moving on from this topic onto AEW as a whole. Again, a solid show. Beach Break in 2 weeks, and next week's Dynamite even both look like pretty stacked with some great stuff to look forward to. I'm quite looking forward to Dax Harwood wrestling a singles match. I think I think he should lose. I think the story should be that he's better with Cash by his side. So I mean I wouldn't be opposed to that story. I think there's a lot of avenues you can take. But yeah, I mean, Dynamite, a very solid show again. In terms of news coming out of the show, we have got here some news about Will Hobbs, and he spoke on AEW Unrestricted this week. And he said about how he had a WWE tryout. WWE said to him, oh, we don't have anything for you now. And then years later, after he made his AEW appearance, of course, WWE reached out to him and said, hey, can we do some work for you? And he basically told them to F off. He basically said, like, F you, I've got no time for that. And listen, it is... You can understand why you'd be annoyed. Like, WWE has got no time for him. He then appears on AEW, and they've got all the time for him in the world. So, I mean, listen, Will Hobbs got a lot of potential. I think he's going to be, along with Ricky Starks, real breakout stars of AEW, yeah. Of Team Taz. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy that he turned down WWE, because I think he'd just be although you're sort of guy they'd like, he'd probably just turn into a stereotypical big guy again.
Yeah, I like this story. I'm glad that Will Hobbs kind of sees the games that are being played, and Will Hobbs knows his self-worth and can bet on himself to know that if you didn't want me before I was an AEW dark talent, then you don't deserve me after I've been an AEW dark talent. And I think he's obviously made the right choice. He's in there in Team Taz, you know, such a great faction. He's got some good spotlight on him. And yeah, good for Will Hobbs for doing the right thing for him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think Will Hobbs has got a lot of potential. Is definitely okay. I think that we've spoken on, well, I've spoken on to SB3 on the show before about how some people just working for WWE is their dream. But I mean, with AEW as a viable competitor now, you can make it in wrestling without having to work for WWE. So I don't really see it. I was gonna say, I don't see this as for wrestlers now where they don't really have a choice. If WWE comes calling and they want to make it in wrestling, previously they would just have to accept it, but now we've got options.
Yeah, so many people, obviously it was their dream to work for WWE. It was everybody's dream to work for WWE before AEW came around, because where else were you going to be on such a big stage wrestling? But I don't want to, you know, sit here and tell people to change their dream, but dreams can change when other options arise. And I think it'd be great if some wrestlers were less stuck in the mentality of, you know, WWE is the only place. Like, they do, there's a lot of wrestlers that do still feel that way, and I think that the pandemic's probably made that worse, and I wish that would kind of change a bit. But I think more people should follow Will Hobbs' lead and, you know, take a chance.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And so Will Hobbs might not be too fond of the AEW product now, of the WWE product, call it, and chose to work for AEW. And someone else that isn't too fond of the WWE product right now is, seemingly of all people, Vince McMahon's close personal friend, The Undertaker. So as we mentioned at the top of this show, The Undertaker appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience. He's been doing his sort of media train, I guess, media tour recently, appearing on Hot Ones, appearing on a lot of other sort of podcasts and sort of more mainstream, I'd say, shows. And he most recently appeared with Joe Rogan and said the following about the WWE product. The product has changed so much and it's kind of off. I'll probably piss a lot of people off, but they need to hear it. It is what it is. To the young guys who think he's an old bitter guy, I'm not bitter. I did my time. I walked away when I wanted to walk away. I just think that the product is a little soft. There are guys here and there that have an edge to them, but there's too much pretty and not enough substance. You also spoke about how, I can't remember the exact quote, because I haven't got it in front of me here, but he spoke about how guys in his day would be walking around the locker room with guns and knives, and now they're just talking about video games. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd much rather work in a locker room where there's no guns and knives and there's video games, but each to their own. I mean, you can see why an old-timer, like I mean, we've seen so many people from when Undertaker was wrestling have fallen out of love with the product. You can see why the Undertaker, someone that was involved with wrestling at the time, would also maybe struggle to watch the current product.
This is a bad comment by the Undertaker. This is a very misguided comment. Because what is wrong with WWE right now is not what he was talking about. There are creative problems that we've discussed with Raw, 3 hours, whatever. Like those are the problems. Firstly, soft was such a bad word to use. Like that, you can dig into many different meanings in that. But the way that he was talking about the young guys and like, it was as if he was saying like, we had real men in my day, that type thing. Yeah. And that's just like really bad mentality. One thing you can say about how wrestling is now compared to how it was when The Undertaker was younger is it has much improved as a community, as how the wrestlers are. All of that has got so much better. All for the best. The actual guys that we have today as wrestlers are, well, frankly, better actual wrestlers than we had back in The Undertaker's time, and they seem like better people, really, like people that stay out of trouble a lot more. And I think that the Undertaker also, think of what was going on in WWE in the 90s when he started. Firstly, he was The Undertaker, so think of what that gimmick was like. And I know that I talk so much about my dislike of The Fiend, and people always throw back in my face, but you like The Undertaker. So let's, take how kind of cartoony The Undertaker's gimmick was, plus some of the people that he had around him in the 90s as well. That was totally, cartoony, especially in the New Generation era. Just frankly, I don't know what Mark Calaway is talking about here at all.
And it got weirder. It got weirder. He also admitted to Joe Rogan, seemingly, that he was taking steroids. He said on the Joe Rogan Experience, there was a time when you had to be jacked, especially with the big guys. There was a stigma. You had to be 300 pounds. It's in our head. Nobody gives a S word. They're interested in the characters we are on TV. But in our head, I was like, F, I've got to be 350 pounds. And then he spoke about being on steroids and said that was the wrestler's mindset then, but we're tested for everything, which I don't understand, because there are some big mother effers out there and they're cut, and I don't know how they did it. Like, I couldn't get that way when I was on steroids. I mean, okay, I wasn't expecting that.
Joe Rogan gets stuff out of people. I mean, this seems a bit like Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. Part two.
I do not want to think about the conversations that went on between Vince McMahon and The Undertaker today. And Vince, what are you doing? What are you doing admitting to this stuff? Like, come on, stop.
I know. It's like, just because of the time, the steroid stuff doesn't surprise me, but it is crazy to think that we ever lived in a time when a guy as naturally big as Mark Calaway thought, I need to get on steroids. Like, that's completely insane if that ever happened.
I mean, The Undertaker is, apart from like this year, has protected kayfabe so much, like never doing interviews, never breaking character. And now he's not only breaking character and revealing parts of himself, he's revealing that he was on steroids. I mean,
he's like someone, he has held in every like thought and secret for so long that he's literally like doing the interview equivalent of running down the street naked and just shouting out everything he's ever done in his life because he's like finally free. It's so strange. And also some of the comments he made about current day situation as regards to that probably shouldn't have been made either. Yeah. But that's a very strange interview that The Undertaker did there with Joe Rogan. And I mean, his autobiography is going to be a bombshell when he gets ready to write that. And I think he is going to write that, because it does seem like he's got a lot he wants to say. So I can see that happening. Yeah. Money.
But yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting interview nonetheless. He also spoke about how, I know there was a lot of debate about, oh, The Undertaker's not really retired. But he said to Joe Rogan that he switched his contract. He's not a talent, he's a legend. He only works two or three times a year, and that's sort of what he's going to be doing now. So yeah, he's sort of more, I guess, of doing those legends deals like we see maybe from, I guess, Ric Flair, Mick Foley, those kinds of people, as opposed to, hey, The Undertaker. I mean, I presume Saudi Arabia, when that opens up, he'll be at the Saudi Arabia shows. Whether he wrestles again is another story. But yeah, I mean, very interesting Joe Rogan podcast.
All the rumors that we had before about The Undertaker being a trainer or helping the young guys, based on his comments, I hope that doesn't happen.
steroids. Get on the roids. But yeah, I mean, listen. You think about, I guess what The Undertaker has. How many times he's retired? Do you think we've seen the last of him? I know this isn't linked to what he said on Joe Rogan's podcast, but it has been a debate that people have had since The Last Ride, really, documentary. Do you think we've seen the last of The Undertaker in terms of a wrestler?
Yes, but I don't want to look stupid, so no. I mean, I think we definitely should have. We should have years ago, but it did feel more sincere this time than it had before. He went to the whole trouble of making this documentary. The final farewell thing was slightly strange because of the circumstances of them having no fans. But it does feel like it's more for certain. But I can say that if he does get back in the ring and wrestle again, he has used up any goodwill he has in that regard. He is going to be the boy who cried wolf, and that will be, you know, that the end of it, because after the time he left his coat and hat in the ring, then wrestling more and more and more, and then we have this final farewell, you know, he can't get back in the ring again, and he certainly, if he does, he can't make any song and dance about that being the last time, because everyone will just be like, man, we have, how many going away parties have we had for you now? It's just not happening.
As you say, it's the boy who cried wolf. He's going to retire and then not, and then retire and then not. And then, I mean, listen, if you asked me before Survivor Series, I would have been like, no, The Undertaker's not done. But the way they did it with Vince coming out, I was like, okay, he maybe is done. But never say never, as is the phrase that is always spouted about in wrestling, never say never. And if you told me that The Undertaker was having a match at the next Saudi Arabia show, I'd be like, yeah, probably. All right, so we've got more news to cover here as we continue with the show. So make sure you guys get on over to wrestletalk.com/wrestle2 to submit your Ultra Chats. Get in your questions, comments, statements, anything you want, really, and we'll dive into it. Actually, before the news, let's speak about NXT last night, which was a very solid show. We saw the Women's Dusty Cup kickoff. We saw more the Men's Dusty Cup matches. We saw a fight pit, which I'll always love to see. Very solid show. What did you think overall?
Yep, solid show, but I absolutely loved the fight pit so much. I think that was certainly the best match that happened on Wednesday night. It was so good. I watched that match twice in a row. Like, it ended and I just went back to that match. It was great. Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher are absolutely made for each other. It seems like they may end up as a team. That would be awesome.
Yes, actually, on that note, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, while we've been on the air, WWE has confirmed there is an opening and in the Dusty Cup, because Ashanti the Adonis is injured. So he and Desmond Troy has had to pull out of the show. So filling in for them will be, I mean, the sort of mega team of of Timothy Thatcher and Matt Riddle, that was last year, Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa, which could be really exciting.
Yeah, Ciampa, you know, I really like Ciampa, but he is the dad of NXT, and he does seem a bit lost sometimes, especially when he doesn't have Johnny Gargano, and this is great for him. I think it will really reinvigorate his career. The fight pit is awesome. This is the second one we've seen, and yeah. I hope they don't overdo it because it's so good. I thought commentary, I love that they brought up the Owen Hart Lion's Den match. I love that they brought that up. But I hate it when they kept calling it the structure, saying this structure. That's just a nitpick commentary thing for me. I just hate the word structure being overused in wrestling. But the match was absolutely awesome. There was some great stuff in there. And Timothy Thatcher is the most un-WWE guy that WWE have ever signed. And they have found a great little niche for.
Okay, so just can I check? Has Steph gone? Let me know in the comments. Has Steph gone for anyone else? Or is it just me? Because it looks, I can't see Steph and I can't hear Steph. I'm not sure whether, actually, let me get onto YouTube and have a look who's actually gone. Okay, so Steph's gone. Okay, I mean, if Steph turns up, that's great. But yeah, as she was speaking about NXT, the fight pit was great. I really enjoyed what they did there. I think having that as they haven't mentioned it as Tim Thatcher's stipulation, but the way they're portraying it as such, sort of with him winning both of the matches, is I'm very much a fan of that. Sort of storyline that they're telling subtly, and that whole like, oh, they're doing this they're doing this match of the fight pit that has earned their respect. Like, you can't earn someone's respect more than, I'm gonna move this way so I'm not Steph Chase, you can't earn someone's respect more than being locked in a fight pit with them. So having that and then have them team is really interesting, whether it sets up another match later down the line or whether we now just see them as a proper tag team. But in terms of the rest of the show, I mean, I'm going to leave talking about the Casey Catanzaro bit because it was brilliant. The Casey Catanzaro finisher. But elsewhere on the show, I really like the sort of new signings that have been announced for the Dusty Cup. It was nice to see some new faces. And when they were announced, I was a bit like, oh, these are going to be some sort of new signings, some performance center recruits that we haven't heard of. But I mean, you think about Priscilla Kelly is a name that we've heard on the independent scene for a while. Elena Black is someone that was doing work with AW Dark. So she's someone that we've sort of seen a lot of. And Lacey Ryan, by all accounts, has done sort of very good work on a lot of the independent scenes. But yeah, guys, in the comments, while we wait for Steph to potentially return, I'm just going to check my phone. She said BRB, so she will be back. What did you guys like about NXT or AEW for that matter? Let me know and I will read out some of your comments. And I'm actually just going to remove this banner while Steph isn't here. Yeah, let me know your comments, thoughts on NXT and AEW last night, and we will read some out. I liked Imperium and Lucha House Party. Does this mean Walter is coming? I mean, I don't know. With NXT batch taping, Walter could come, NXT UK, sorry, he could come and be on both. But I think it's always, I guess, interesting to see a return like Alexander Wolf. The way I saw it, he was being portrayed as the leader with him standing at the top and looking at the other people. Perhaps that's how they're going to play it. And Alexander Wolf is going to be the guy to be NXT, basically Imperium's leader while Walter isn't there. Gran Metalik is a great wrestler. Who knew? Yeah, I completely agree. I think he is one of the most underutilized wrestlers, underrated even. We hear it a lot about Cesaro, Gable, but it gets to a point where everyone says they're underrated. So are they underrated? But not enough people put Gran Metalik in that bracket. So I really like Gran Metalik. The Casey spot was great. Yeah, I agree. We actually had a comment here from Matthew. Her finisher was great, but honestly, I couldn't tell if she's supposed to land that way. Hang on. In the meantime, enough of your guys' comments, because she's back. Steph Chase is back. I don't know where she went, but she left me. Are we all good now?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm sorry. My laptop, which has been giving me so many problems this week, decided to just go black screen death.
That's all we got from you, Black Screen Death. I was worried it was me, but I think we had Stu Morrison here, who rather me on my own. So anytime your laptop wants to fade to black, let me know and we can work that out. But no, you were saying about the fight pit and how you enjoyed it. So do you want to finish what you were saying there?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed the match. It's such a cool niche match. I hope they don't overuse it, but it was great, and I think it was definitely the best match that we saw on Wednesday.
Yeah, I agree. And I really liked how they're slowly portraying it as Timothy Thatcher's gimmick, his gimmick match, but without overtly saying, oh my God, this is Timothy Thatcher's.
Yeah.
I just thought it's really good how they do that. It's like subtle, but slowly painting the picture. So it's a long-term story, which I like. I didn't want to talk about this until you were here. But you want to run us down Casey Catanzaro's finish, because I have no clue how to say it. What was it?
I don't have any clue either. it was spectacular. And she is someone that can pull off really spectacular moves. And it was, she rotated many times, and it was something that I could never do, and I'm not sure many other people could do either. But it's great that they finally seem to be properly getting behind her. I think that she has a good shot in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw them in the tournament up against Toni Storm and Mercedes Martinez, I was like, okay, they're losing. They're going to be the fodder. So Mercedes Martinez can look great and Toni Storm can look great. I was not expecting them to win, but I'm really happy for it. It's what it's about. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the tournament progress. We've got some new signings coming through, which is really interesting. We've just got a lot to be excited about with NXT as we head into TakeOver, which is really exciting. I mean, I've got Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai to walk out with a win in the tournament. Who have you got?
Yeah, I think that makes sense, just because they seem so much behind Raquel Gonzalez, and Dakota Kai is such a good hand that, I can see them walking away with it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I could see them walking out with it. I could see it also going to maybe Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, but you don't really know. It's going to be interesting nonetheless to see how the tournament progresses. Hopefully the winners get a women's title shot, a women's tag title shot.
That would make sense, because those women's tag team belts, like, they have been brought to NXT before, and I think they should be brought to NXT more, frankly, and absolutely. There needs to be stakes anyway. So, I mean, a cup is not enough.
I mean, AEW did medals, so anything is possible with women's tag tournaments. I mean, Impact, in that vein, Impact showed us all how to do, or showed up every promotion, how to do a women's tournament. It was perfect. So we've actually got quite a few Ultra Chats here, which I want to dive into. We've got one from Jared Thomas, who says, good afternoon / evening. I'm a huge fan of Legado del Fantasma. I love seeing Santos Escobar's promo where he buries the other champions, including Cross. I see that some people weren't a fan of his promo. What did you think about it? Great show. I liked it. I really just like what Santos Escobar is doing as a whole. I'm a big fan of his. And I saw on Twitter people like Buddy Murphy and Ricochet were sort of speaking about him. And I'd like to see those guys all wrestle each other.
I absolutely loved Santos Escobar's promo in NXT. It was one of my favorite things in the whole show. He had an amazing jacket on, so he looked absolutely fantastic. But I really loved that he went out and referenced every other champion, including Finn Balor, because I think a champion should. You know, he's that kind of champion that wants to put himself out there as the best. And it was cool to hear him, you know, knock down the other champions while he did it. So, yeah, I don't know why. Anyone would have a problem with that promo. It was one of those things when I was watching NXT and I didn't quite have my eye on the TV at that time. Once he started talking, I was like, okay, I'm interested to hear this.
Yeah, me too. I like him. I think what they're doing with it with the NXT Cruiserweight Championship is great. I'd like to see more of it. I'd like to see more of the NXT Cruiserweight Championship and things of that vein, because it does feel like a bit of an afterthought. So I would like to see more of it. But elsewhere on the show, and sort of not on the show, but backstage on the show, we saw, or is reported, that a man by the name of Parker Brodeaux was backstage. So for those that haven't seen him, this is Parker Brodeaux.
Yes.
So, Brock Lesnar. great. I mean, look at him. Recently, Paul Heyman tweeted about him, saying this. Paul Heyman tweeted saying, basically, Parker Brodeaux follows everyone, by the way. If you want to be followed by a wrestler, follow Parker Brodeaux. He tweeted 2021 is going to be something special. Paul Heyman quote tweets it and said, "This is not a prediction, it's a spoiler. Save this hustle tweet for the future historical reference." But yeah, I mean, look at him. He's reportedly someone that WWE is very interested in. So yeah, I'd like to see more of him. If he's backstage at NXT, good stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe it's a stretch to say new signing, but the fact he's backstage in a closed set is pretty significant. So I think I would be shocked if this guy isn't someone that WWE looks for and sort of it works on signing soon.
Yeah, me too. I think that the only thing that would worry me is because he has this striking look that is very much reminiscent of Brock Lesnar, that they might try to rush him onto TV or something before he's ready. This seems like a guy that they should really take their time with, because he has so much future potential.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth actually pointing out, I just assumed everyone would know who Parker Brodeaux is. So he is a current American footballer. He plays for the UCF. Let me get this up fully, because I do not know my American football. He plays for the UCF Knights football. Okay, cool. Not a clue what that is. They're in Florida. Great. So he's in the Florida area. Maybe people in the comments can have a look. But I mean, the fact he looks like Brock Lesnar, is built like a brick house.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I presume he'll be someone the company looks for the future. In a little bit more news, sort of while we move away from Parker Brodeaux, and obviously we'll keep you updated with anything that emerges with regards to his contract status. There's news on Roman Reigns getting new music. So a lot of people are like, the music doesn't suit him. Like the whole Shield music, it needs to change with his new gimmick. So he said to Bleacher Report, "We're working on it. It's not easy because I'm not going to with this character. It has to be right. We can't just hire a rapper, check his guitar riff. It can't be some rock music. The Shield music, I wasn't really into it back in the day, but over the years, it just started working. You get so used to it that it's just time and a pace. But yeah, it takes some time and it has to be right. In order to move away from something you've had for so long and so recognizable, like the music I have now, it's got to be perfect. It's taking some time, but we're definitely working on it. So be patient." WrestleMania, probably time for new music or a big pay-per-view. Can't just have it on an episode of SmackDown. I think it's got to be sort of a new pay-per-view. Have Roman Reigns come out with his new music.
Yeah, I think with Roman having the Shield music, that was kind of always something that was used against him, wasn't it? That he still had the Shield outfit and he still had the Shield music. And it did work. It would be so weird to hear him with something else, but he really needs it. But he's such a heel that I would love him to just be no music. Like, you know, remember when Ciampa did that in NXT? Just coming out, or something that's really, really low key. I'm almost thinking like something like GOD's last theme, not their current one, the one before that. Something,
It's got to suit that Samoan-ness. And I'm not sure how you do that. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully something of that ilk that sort of symbolizes what he's doing. And everything they've done with him has been 10 out of 10 so far. So I'm looking forward to seeing
the more
of what they do with him. And sort of the music and the other part of his presentation that comes with that.
Mm-hmm. Everything they've done, as you said, has been so perfect, but it seems that he's had so much of a say in it that this music is not going to be like a kind of a Keith Lee job. It's going to be something that's really that he is totally comfortable with.
Yeah, I completely agree. We got a couple of more Ultra Chats here that I want to get into before we head out. One here from Matty, who says, "Hey, Louis, and hey, Steph. Hope you're both good. I asked Alex and SV3 this a while ago, but did you like the 2009-10 Raw guest host era? Who was your favorite and least favorite? P.S. Matthew McCoskey asks, with TakeOver and Revolution coming up, predict most of the card." Look at Matthew McCoskey there getting in a comment when he's not paid, cheeky, but we'll do it because Matty's ultra chatted. Did I like the 2009-2010 guest host era of War? I wasn't watching at the time, so I'm not going to pretend to be sort of the biggest fan of the era. But in terms of my favorite, I don't really know. I can't really name you any of the hosts. As I said, I wasn't watching at the time, so your guess is as good as mine. How about you?
I can't think of anyone. There's people that I think of that I can't remember if they were guest hosts or not that I was surprised slash happy to see turn up, like a Betty White or John Johnson. But I can't, you know, exactly remember what they did. Did I like the guest host role era? No, because it was just, you know, it was a gimmick thing that took away from the wrestling. Like, I don't want to see it. I'm not a big fan of celebrity involvement in wrestling. I'm really not. It's not my thing. So yeah, that whole era wasn't really for me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's like, listen, you've obviously got, it was only 2 hours to fill at the time. And it's obviously good for sort of that mainstream appeal. I remember Hugh Jackman came on. So you've got Hugh Jackman. I remember he knocked out Dolph Ziggler, and Dolph Ziggler had a hairline fracture the next couple of weeks on Raw. So you get somewhere like a mainstream place saying, oh, this has happened with WWE superstars and Hugh Jackman. Or you have, who else? The Entourage were there when there was all the Zack Ryder and John Cena storyline. So you have people like them, and then the mainstream sites pick them up. And I remember you were saying when you said you started in journalism, anything that you could do for an entertainment site that linked to wrestling, that's why they did it. They did it.
John Stewart was the man at the time. John Stewart was the man, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what he did at SummerSlam, but nonetheless. And the rest of
the question, it's one of those.
Can we pick? Go on.
No, carry on. It's fine.
I was going to say, for the rest of the Ultra Chat, he said, can we predict the card for TakeOver and Revolution? I mean, we can give a few matches. I think for Revolution, we see SCU versus the Young Bucks, with that being SCU's last match. I think they're going to win the Battle Royal, and then they're going to lose at Revolution and have sort of that'd be their last match as a team. In terms of other matches, probably Moxley and Omega. And I could see something with Sting, Taz, and Cody versus Sting, Darby Allin, and Cody, sorry, versus Team Taz in some sort of cinematic or way that Sting can be protected. We'll get on to talking about what you think about the show, and then we'll mention our takeover stuff. So, what do you think for AEW Revolution? Any match predictions?
Young Bucks and SCU, that probably seems to be the way. If they're going to do Sting in the street fight, I would save it for the pay-per-view, but you know, they do like putting stuff on TV. I'm trying to think of a women's match because we're getting Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker in a couple of weeks.
I mean, if Baker wins, probably Baker and Shida.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. But that's, you know, that's a big match. That could be a title change match. Moxley, yeah, I think he'll probably get a shot against Omega. He's not going to win. So maybe it's a Good Brothers interference or something like that. And I feel like there could be something Inner Circle-ish. It might be Sammy versus MJF to sort this out again, because these two are never getting along. But yeah, it is a hard card to predict because we have the beach bad stuff coming in there in between.
No, I agree with you. And in terms of takeover cards, I'd say Pete Dunne versus Finn Balor, probably the finals of the men's and women's Dusty Cups. So for me, Grizzled Young Veterans versus probably MSK. And then for the women, probably Candice LeRae and Io Shirai. Candice LeRae and who's it? Indy Hartwell. Indy Hartwell versus Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. And I'd probably go for Io Shirai versus Mercedes Martinez as well. Probably something with Johnny Gargano and Kushida in there as well.
I feel like with the men, I feel like we could see Ciampa and Thatcher in there in the finals. Yeah, because it would be it would not be unique in the Dusty Cup for a put together tag team to win it like that.
They love that. It wouldn't be the Dusty Cup without it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I could see something like that.
Completely. We got a few more Ultra Chats, which we'll head into before we head out of here. One from Russell Scope, who says, could the winners of the Women's Dusty Cup become the first NXT Women's Champions? For me, no. They don't need another belt. They should just get a shot at the WWE Women's Tag Titles, which I'd like to see defended more on NXT.
Yeah, if they used the Women's Tag Team titles better, they would be across all three brands. Like, they really would. They're not using them well at all. The double champion thing worked for Sasha and Bayley because of their character. There is no need for it with Asuka. That actually waters down the achievement that you give Sasha and Bayley. Like, these belts need to be put on. That's why, you know, they weren't the best wrestlers at all, but that's why the Iconics were so perfect, because they were a tag team, just being a tag team, doing tag team things. So you could have them, you know, go down to NXT, move across Raw and SmackDown, and take on everyone.
They weren't two singles that would be put into a tag slot, which I think is important.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening at WrestleScope. And then final one here from CM Chris. Hi, Louis, and hi, Steph. Yet another quality show from Dynamite last night, and who knows what will happen with AEW/Impact in the future after what Mox said in his promo as well. I love wrestling right now. Yeah, I mean, you can't not love wrestling right now. It's such a good time to be a fan. Hopefully that is only going to improve when crowds come back. That's like when crowds come back, we can get fans at Impact. I mean, Impact's probably going to have great numbers at their shows. WrestleMania reportedly going to have fans. I can't wait to hear that proper crowd back again at some point. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Anything you wanted to add, Steph, before we head on out?
Yeah, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. And it always is in January, because no matter what the WWE do, they always give us the Royal Rumble. And they in do. Recent years, too. So it's January is a great time to be a wrestling fan. Everything else sucks in January except wrestling.
This is true. But guys, thank you so much for your support over the last couple of days on the Wrestling Daily shows. And just since Alex hasn't been here and while he's been here as well. I'll be here.
It's been really fun doing it with you, Louis. It has been fun.
It has been really fun. Hopefully Alex can get flown out to Abu Dhabi more often. But I'll be here tomorrow with Dave, UK commentator Dave Bradshaw, who was on the WrestleTalk podcast on Friday with Luke Owen. So I'll be here with him tomorrow, looking at the news in professional wrestling and looking forward to next week, which is Royal Rumble week. And then I'll be back on Tuesday with yours truly will be back with Alex McCarthy. The triumphant return on Tuesday next week to digest Raw, which I'm sure he cannot wait to get into. While you wait for those shows, make sure you're following Stephanie on Twitter at Stephanie M. Chase and over on YouTube at her YouTube channel.
Join me tomorrow for my AW show at 11:30 p.m. UK time tomorrow.
I was just about to get there because there is so much we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about Inner Circle. We didn't talk about Eddie Kingston, Jake Roberts. So that if you want to, you can choose that show and not know everything that Steph thought about the shows. But yeah, guys, thank you so much, and we will see you soon.